If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder.
Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people. I've decided to speak this way from now on.
And that'll conclude this episode of the Weird Things podcast. Joining us also is Mr. Justin Robert Young, who has no chance at all of topping Brian's silly voice.
Brian, your Bane accent must be more severe.
I didn't realize I was doing Bane. That's what I always love. I never think about in advance what we're going to say when he introduces us. It's as big a surprise to me as anyone else.
I find myself doing Bane a lot.
Yeah, just, you do.
I was trying to.
That was the sound of two brains short-circuiting.
Don't judge, all right? Okay?
Right on.
Like I said, just that voice, it just stays with you.
It really does. You're like, I would like hot and fire sauce.
Mexican melt. Because it's that B. Arthur, Sean Connery.
It's fun.
All over the place.
Yes. A combo number five with no mayonnaise.
No, brother, my permission. I want to supersize.
Yes. Too many.
So, we're going to get started right off the bat right here. We're going to play a little bit of a guessing game.
Yeah, ready. Love them. Ready.
Best thing about the guessing games is how good me and Brian are at them.
Oh, my gosh. What are we, a billion and nothing? We're nothing but win.
You guys are amazing. Nailing them. Absolutely amazing. So, this woman, call her a woman, her name is Jackie.
Jackie Hearn?
Jackie
Robinson.
Jackie the Joke Man Martling.
Jackie Joyner Kersee.
Jackie Chan.
Jackie has an interesting job.
Huh.
Okay.
Let's take a guess.
The Jack in the Box guy.
And I don't want some logical, just narrow it down. I want just some, it's some people don't approve of this job. She gets criticized for this job. To other people, they think it's a very important job. It's not a...
She a witch?
Like it's probably not an occupation that many of us are familiar with, and maybe it could be bring about sort of a new wave of people doing this job. But
is she an exorcist?
No,
she.
If she does that, she does that in her spare time and not in.
Well, let's narrow it down, Brian.
All right.
Does she work for a government or some kind of public trust?
Does she? But she performs a public service?
Some would say so.
Those are the answers I love.
Does she take money for her services?
Yes. Yes, she does.
Oof. Is there any... Do people experience sexual gratification in any way?
It's not the intent, but it could happen. But then, you know, you could maybe do that playing Galaga too, Brian.
And have. Let me, I'll tell you about my Galaga days.
All right. Does she work with animals?
No.
Interesting. But she works with people, though.
Yes.
She work one-on-one or with groups?
Generally one-on-one.
Huh.
That was the great question alarm.
That's right. It was an alert that I was
it only
honing
goes off
in.
When great questions are asked by Brian Brushwood. Download your Great Questions app today.
That was the target lock sound. Oh, man. So one-on-one. I think it's your turn, Justin.
Has she been protested?
like people on the street protesting.
Strongly worded letter.
Yes.
Now, would some people regard her avocation as supernatural?
Probably not.
Whoa, interesting.
You're really in on this witch thing, bro. You just want to figure out another way
I'm just trying to figure out, you know, if she's on weird things, there's only a few domains. You got, you know, something magically, something weirdly sciency, and then this mushy weird middle part that I can't seem to figure out.
Last week we had a cat stealing Zlotys.
That's true.
We work with range here.
It was a psychic cat.
That's right. Who was levitating while he used his actual paws to steal the cash.
Does her service do her services promise any health benefit, like a healing benefit?
Not in a way that the FDA would come down on.
So she wouldn't. It wouldn't be a fraud in that area.
No.
I mean, is she a fraud? Can we ask that?
I don't think so.
Huh. Is she out for advice of some variety?
Not really.
Did she shoot Abraham Lincoln?
That's her hobby.
She is a professional Abraham Lincoln assassinator. Yes.
And her accomplice is Igor, the Zloty stealing cat.
Does she travel a lot for this job, or is it all local?
No. She actually does most of her place of business.
Her place of business, huh? Is it centrally located? I guess you don't know.
New York.
Well, that's pretty central to New York. Does she buy and sell objects, or only perform the service?
It's a service.
Has she been arrested?
Not to my knowledge.
Has she arrested anybody with her smashing good looks?
She performs a service one-on-one for people. Centrally located, deals just with them one at a time.
Oh, my God,
It's not advice. What?
Harlem Globetrotter.
No, that's not one-on-one.
Breaking mofos down one-on-one.
No.
Broken ankles.
No, it doesn't have anything to do with animals. It doesn't have anything to do with multiple people. She doesn't have to travel to do it. People come to her. Do we have any idea how much money she makes?
She can make up to $260 a day.
Okay. She has. Not giving advice, nothing sexual. Wait, did I ask? It's not anything sexual, right? I'm sure that's the first thing I asked.
I gave an answer to that question.
You said some might find it sexual. That's true. But it wouldn't be her fault. It'd be the fault of someone else. She a masseuse? She does massage?
No.
Does she touch people?
What an awesome episode of Weird Things this would be if it was actually just a regular masseuse in New York City. And there was nothing strange about her. It was just an elaborate way for us to play.
And it ends with the anticlimactic, yeah, that's it. So you want to do picks?
That's our sponsor this week, Frankie's Massage Parlor.
Does it involve her touching someone?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Clothes on or clothes off?
Clothes on.
Clothes on, touching. Is she making assessments of their body when she touches them?
No, there's no judgment involved.
Oh, no. I mean, like, is she touching in order to glean information as part of her service, or is the touching the service itself?
Touching's the service itself.
Touching's the service itself. She a foot rubber?
Handshake artist.
No.
Phrenologist. No. Is she a phrenologist?
No.
Jive handshake artist.
What about acupuncture? Do an acupuncture? No?
No.
Does it involve any kind of implements when she's touching?
Professional nose picker.
No.
Does she use just her hand or any other objects?
No other objects.
Uh-oh. Other.
Does she use other parts of her body?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, go on.
Like feet?
Is she walking on people?
No.
She rubbing.
It's funny. I go, no, like, and that's actually that's more absurd than actually in one way what she does. So I don't mean it like, no, that's crazy. That's weird.
So she rubs and let's talk about the therapeutic benefits of this. It's not any kind of massage that people are going to get. What is it that they want done? Curing disease?
Okay. Can I ask, and this is kind of a question that relies on the personalities of the host of this show. Would Brian pay for it?
Some might say that Brian has. All right, but I would say no.
All right, no, that's good. Would Justin pay for it?
No, Justin might get paid for doing it though.
Yeah, bitch.
Wow. The object that she rubs on someone else's body, the part of her body, is it below the belt? Or is it the belt?
It's. I don't think we established that she rubbed.
Okay. Oh, okay. Right. But she touches a part of her body. Wait, does she punch people? She like a professional people puncher?
No.
Oh. That's, I believe those are called assassins, Brian.
Okay. This part of her body that she uses, is it bigger than a bread box? And before you answer, take time to Google image search.
What?
Yes.
It's bigger than a bread box?
Well, you guys have made an assumption there that I did not say.
Yeah, all right. Well, we said it was part of her body that we're picturing her rubbing or pushing or touching a part of her body onto them. But apparently that's off base.
Well, no, I'm just saying she apparently uses a part of her body that isn't her hands in this therapeutic act.
Right.
Well, we didn't say that she didn't use her hands.
Oh, not necessarily?
Yeah. Yeah. No, this other part is part of it.
Does she like lay her body down on you and just be there so you can smell her while you just sort of think about how lonely you are?
Cuddle artist?
She's a cuddle artist.
Wait, really?
Yes.
A cuddle artist is a thing?
She's a professional cuddler, okay? Jackie yes. Samuels, 29, established The Snuggery in Rochester, New York. Spooning peacefully in a double bed, this pair could be any normal couple on a Sunday morning. But revisit the scene an hour later, and Jackie Samuel will be curled up in the arms of another man.
This is great.
The 29-year-old is a professional cuddler. She turns to snuggling with strangers to help pay for her studies and provide for her young son.
I'm totally okay with this. I bet it means a lot to those lonely men that they just have be touched by another human being.
Yeah.
Well, these, I remember for a while, and this might have been... Yeah, listen, if there's any younger listeners, back in the wild go-go early aughts, I remember there was a trend of cuddle party.
Cuddle party.
That oh, really?
A bunch of like-minded people that would all get together and snuggle together in this big orgy of snuggery.
Yeah. There was kind of some of that going on in high school, but it was always like awkward, like, oh, look, how many of us can we fit on this bed and lay here in the dark listening to Whoa. Jane's Addiction or whatever?
give me the
sounds
the
a lot like Dragon Con,
what's
right?
the gender yeah. breakdown on those?
Two or three boys. Although it's been dependent on who was there. Like, you know, like, hey, let's turn off the lights, just sit here and chill. Sometimes it would be like, four desperate guys and one girl or whatever. But it's just like, I don't know.
But there was a sexual undercurrent.
No, I mean, not necessarily. Like
half of them really hope so.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what it was like. I'm sure that you know, because it wasn't going to go anywhere right in front of everyone. But it was just like, you're like, OMG, my cheek is laying near her knee. I'm touching girl flesh.
Mama, my cheek is laying near her knee.
Yeah. Or it's like, you know, it's like, wow, you know, her head is laying on my arm. This is touching. I'm touching a girl.
Those were the days.
But all right. So, but do you think for these, the gentlemen who have their snuggery, frequent
to the snuggery.
Snuggler card?
Yeah. I mean, I'm betting I mean, there comes a time that if you're lonely in a town or whatever and you realize, like, I've not touched another human being. Like, my guess is after you cuddle for a bit, even if it goes nowhere, my guess is you're swimming in endorphins for at least a couple hours afterwards.
I think we're a social species. Every other primate likes to be touched, and not all forms of touching are sexual in nature. I think some guys, maybe it's a suggestion of that, but I think certainly, you know, when you've had a really good massage, you go, oh, I mean, it's something totally different. And you just really appreciate what that kind of just the body responding to that. There's what do chimps do all day? They sit around grooming each other.
Yes. Also,
can I make an albeit possibly harsh guess, though, at the ratio of guys who are involved in this who do not take a overtly sexual angle to it, if even just internally? Because I would say it's 98% of her clientele. That 2% of the guys view this in a completely platonic way and aren't in some way at least lusting after this 29-year-old woman.
I think that number's way, way off. I mean, I would say, you know, maybe because, I mean, number one, well, I don't know. It's number one, that would be socially awkward to become like physically aroused at your weekly appointment where all you do is lay there cuddling with someone. I don't know. I can't imagine that. I mean, and this is, you know, I'm not going to say I know what other people think, but to just say what body's touching, they want to have sex. That's all it is. That's all it is. It's like,
that's,
I think it's
what
silly.
Happens. Body starts slapping.
That's right. That's right. From doing the wild thing.
I'm just, I guess, number one. And I think maybe we should have this woman on the show and we can ask her these questions.
No,
but
better
I
yet,
think if
we should try these services.
We should go to Rochester.
Did it move?
And by the way, I've been to Rochester. You know, there people need cheering up. I would just say for this woman, if let's say something arose between them during this therapeutic session, that would be written off as just professional courtesy. That's just something that happens. I don't think it would be like a social faux pas. I think it would just be something that was a natural element of people who pay for snuggles.
Wow. So you would put it completely on par with if the same thing were to happen at a massage.
Well, I don't know.
Because by that same logic, that's the only reason anyone gets a massage etiquette than I do.
So I don't know what's cool and what's not. I've never actually been in a professional massage.
You've never gotten a massage?
In a professional massage, no. There is no body-to-genital contact. When you're snuggling, yeah. When you're spooning.
Well, because you're not naked spooning. Was that part of this story?
No, you know, she has her underwear on and pajamas, and you're not allowed to touch the underwear area.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's
a little
like,
twist of fate. It's Mormon underwear.
Yeah. No, it's very inappropriate to become physically aroused at least in America at massages. And I would imagine it's the same thing for this. My guess is like she's not going to let you just rub your turgid body parts on her.
Is that in the way?
Yeah.
I mean, but like.
By the way, and as you make these excuses, hold on. As you make these excuses, just realize that the entire time you're not talking to me. In my mind, you're talking to her and justifying why this is happening. So, but by all means, please continue.
I'm just saying, do this. Number one, I don't think that there's a business in the non enhanced version of this snuggle. If that element of it is banned and she makes a living off it, then I will say to this young woman of the central New York area, there is a bigger business in you being the one that like, hey, I'll snuggle and ain't no questions asked about who comes to dinner.
Wow, man. I got a feeling. I don't know.
Brian, to your point, and to Justin, she says, I think my clients come for all sorts of reasons. Some of my older clients, their wives have passed away, and they just need someone to be with, like someone to experience touch with.
So you want to keep selling this, Justin?
Listen, like, she can say whatever she wants. I have a very firm belief on the I know what evil lurks in the hearts of men, like the shadow. I know that that Big Ben strikes one when they roll in to this woman's bed for snuggle time.
No, I actually think that's horribly insensitive and not true at all. I think that there are guys who just realize, like, you know, my life would be better if I touched another human being. And, you know, I don't want to pay for sex. I don't want any of the hang-ups of any of that. I want to feel like, whether it's a confidence booster, whether it's a something to make people feel not alone, because I bet there's a lasting impact of that for a long time, and I think it's totally fine.
And I'm gonna say
the vast majority of it is not sexual.
Okay, like, but what are we really discussing? Except for, because I'm not saying that these guys are in it for sex. I'm not saying that they are trying to have sex with her. I'm saying that a component of this is sexual. And I'm not saying they act on it. I'm saying that a part of that, you know, hey, I just want human contact. I would just like to be near somebody else. That an element of that is, I don't think you can separate, or most guys do separate rather, in their own heads from a sexual act on some level.
Okay, but here's the problem, though, is like, if there's no physical arousal and there's no, and nothing gets done, how can you sit there and still say, still sexual? Like, I mean, if that by that, you're like, still sexual, bro. It doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, we're arguing something that can't be proven. I'm arguing motivation.
Right. And I'm saying, correct. And I think it's not necessarily sexual. In fact, I would say
the only thing that you're saying is everything exactly happens the exact same way in both of our scenarios, except in yours completely eliminates the fact that they can think of anything sexual when they have their arms and pelvis pressed up against the 29-year-old.
You threw out the 98%, Justin.
Yeah,
you're like,
you're the one who proposed a number. I'm saying that's an outrageous number and it's not true.
Sure. That's fine.
Well, meanwhile, do we have a sponsor this week? Maybe the Snuggery?
98%. I want to hear feedback on this. All right. We do certainly have a sponsor. It's Joseph Cernell. He writes, please consider helping make my dream project come true. I want to create a visual time capsule of Western Pennsylvania. It's people and events from the perspective of somebody who has lived here. And that's all he wrote. So, Joseph, I agree with your dream to capture Western Pennsylvania, a region of the country that is dear to my heart. I think that you need to email justinrobertyoung@gmail.com to let me know what URL or how we can best help you achieve your goal. But we'll list that there on the Weird Things site, a way that you can get in touch with Joseph Cernell. But thank you very, very much, Joseph, for helping sponsor the Weird Things podcast. And if you would like to do the same, go ahead on over to weirdthings.com/sponsor, and you can do the same. $30, we'll read your thing.
Gentlemen.
Yeah.
We've gone from the inner recesses of human emotion, and now we're going to go way out into outer space.
You mean the 99%? We are the 99%. We're not like you 1%ers, Brian. You non-sexual cuddling 1%ers.
We're going to go to a place where there is no cuddling. And that's Mars.
Okay. Yeah.
Recently, we've been have our Mars Curiosity rover probing the surface of Mars. This thing's the size of a Mini Cooper, which got all sorts of cool things. It's got lasers.
By the way, you know who's
rock.
Really bummed with that metaphor that everyone keeps using, that comparison? Like the VW Bug, not happy with it. He's just like, I used to be the standard by which objects of this size were judged. Now the Mini Cooper's on top.
Well, the VW is like, it's now kind of like real high-end and stylish, kind of looks like an Audi. And
wait, but Mini Cooper's all money.
Yeah, it still looks like a clown car.
Yeah, no, it does.
So, we right now we have this big probe there, and one of the things we've talked about doing is a Mars sample return. The idea of going there, getting a piece of Mars, putting it on board, and then bringing it back to Earth and then taking a look at it. And there are some complications to that. You would need a more sophisticated program to take something from the surface there and bring it back here. Although SpaceX, that we talked before, they have an idea on how you could use one of the Dragon capsules to do that. There's been talk of other things that we could do, manned missions, et cetera. And a new idea, relatively new to me, has been proposed by Mr. J. Craig Venter and separately by a guy by the name of John Rothberg, who's the founder of a DNA sequencing company. And they have the idea, the radical idea, forget a sample return. Let's send a probe to Mars with a DNA sequencer and just start scooping up whatever we can and sending back, if we start finding DNA, just sending back the information. And then back on Earth, in a very, very controlled environment, we can take a look at the DNA sequences. We could fax whatever forms of life that we see and avoid, hopefully, any sort of problems, because we'd be looking at DNA first before we find out, oh, this is the Earth-killing plague.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Now, how much more equipment do you think we need than we have right now?
I think that the sequencers now are getting incredibly smaller. You have actually desktop sequencers smaller than, you know, a PC. And so, and they seem to get the same sort of rate of return that other forms of technology have. And so I think by the time somebody says, yes, let's go launch it, we'll have something that's going to be a very, very small sequencer that you could put on board and send off to Mars. I think that it would be well within the payload capacities we're currently capable of.
So what do you, how would you, like what, you just go kind of churning through the Martian turf and there are sensors that are like, whoa, 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 we got DNA, bro.
Yeah, so Venter, and I actually have the Wired magazine cover up on my wall here. He did a program where he had a yacht, I think it was called the Sorcerer. He took it around the world, and they would just scoop up buckets of water, pour it through filter paper, take whatever they found, send it off to labs where they would just mince it up, and they just were looking for individual DNA sequences. And it was a way to find out what kind of sequences were all around the world. And that's the kind of thing you would do here. You'd be scooping up bits of dirt and hopefully finding organic life and bits of DNA. And the idea that if we're going to find any form of life, it's going to have DNA as its base structure.
Yeah. No, that's I think that's a very sensible precaution to not bring Martian plague back home.
So here's the question.
Uh-oh.
One is, if this seems like a good idea, has it been done before?
Oh, to us?
Yeah. I mean, now we said, hey, what's a very practical way to do this? You could eventually, we have microchips that can sequence parts of DNA.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
So you're saying, okay, so let's say you're a precursor civilization, super advanced, and you want to know what's going around. You realize that it's dumb to pile up a bunch of your species into a starship, burn up a bunch of fuel and energy and time, go into planets onesie twosies at a time. Instead, you sit there and you fire off a bunch of space pods that go to a bunch of different planets around a bunch of different stars, and they all start just, you know, grinding around looking to see what kind of life there is, and then, you know, bing, bing, like we got a winner over here.
I'll go one up, okay? We already have forms of life that have a habit of sometimes of copying little bits of DNA. Virus gets into you, virus takes over your cellular machinery, starts to replicate itself, but sometimes it gets copies bits of code and can sometimes jump species.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And you could design something like that. We may have something in nature that already does that, that actually takes little bits of DNA for some other purpose. I don't know. But meanwhile, there's a bacterium, and there's one of probably many several, that does cloud seeding. And what it does is it latches onto a plant stalk, and in the morning it changes its charge and it floats up into the air, goes up into the atmosphere, and the surface of it has got these bumps and ridges on it that line up with water molecules. And
right.
It nucleates, it basically forms snow, and then it falls, brings water, you know, forms a little crystal that then causes precipitation, and it brings water back down onto the area. So this is part of the hydrological cycle we're just discovering, okay? It's a bacteria that cloud seeds. So we know now that we have bacteria that can say, hey, time to fly, okay? changes charge, drifts up into there. You could design tiny little microbial life to do this and maybe have it wafted off, some of it go in the upper atmosphere.
And then just catch a breeze on the solar wind, and then off you go. Space spores.
We should maybe see where our solar winds are blowing off into. Maybe they're little collection nets. Maybe they're streams of matter throughout the solar system and going to the next.
So you would just have to put these things on planet X and then just kind of wait for the stink to get to you.
Just go out there and just blow them in the direction of every star I see and wait a long time.
That's amazing, because it really is. It's just a numbers game, man. You get enough of them, and then why not? You know, true panspermia, you know?
We've already seen a microscopic life form. They're called water bears because they kind of look like bears. They're not really bears, but they look like bears. Ever seen those?
No. Should I look them up? Water bears, you said?
Yeah, water bears. Water bears are worth looking up, okay? And they're very cuddly.
I don't know about... I'm sure there's certain sites that advertise for water bears that are just a complete...
There you go again, trying to make it just dirty, my God. Justin.
Talk about cuddly. Whoa, these things look grotesque. What are these
things? Those are amazing.
They look like polar bears if from Half-Life 2. They've got like this weird cloaca-looking single... sucker thing on his face, and it looks like it looks like those fat guy sumo suits that you can wrestle around in for at your parties.
At fully grown, they're 1 millimeter.
That's big.
Okay, they're very, very. They were discovered 250 years ago, and people started first looking in microscopes. And what the amazing thing about water bears is you can find them all over. And they're very, very hardy. It turns out that you can freeze them and they'll come back. They can even survive in the vacuum of space.
Oh, that's the one that freaks me out. And it's like, there's a lot of different vectors. You got radiation, you got no oxygen, you got extreme cold, you got vacuum. But you never know, man. You get enough, you get lucky.
Yeah, well, if you have that process of evolution going over for billions of years... We remember we extremophiles, we didn't even know that they were existed until quite recently, and then we find extremophiles that can even resist radiation. So they've actually had these.
Oh my gosh, this is a water bear egg. It looks like a buckyball with like weird cones all over it. That's crazy.
They took some dried up tardigrades, and they put them on. They had 10 days of exposure to space, returned to Earth. They're able to rehydrate them, and they came back alive. Exposed to ultraviolet radiation, cosmic rays, vacuum does nothing to them.
Man, that's amazing. Look, somebody's made a picture of a water bear in space. So now at 1 millimeter, would you be able to, that's too big to just be able to flip your electric charge and float up, right?
Well, it depends on what kind of high winds you have probably. It depends. I mean, it depends on, you know, what kind of mass it has relative to that.
So if that's the case, then that sort of transforms all of space into a giant soup all coming and going.
That's one theory, is that we've realized the likelihood, and we've talked about this before, of Earth's been hit by meteors that have actually caused parts of Earth to reach escape velocity and to probably come down on Mars, other planets in our solar system, other moons, and potentially send rocks. I think it was, we did the math, like a 28 light year radius.
Wow.
We just found a planet we just found that there was an Earth-sized planet orbiting one of the Alpha Centauri stars, right?
Yes.
And this planet's way too close. It's probably tide-locked, so maybe on the other side, who knows what goes on there, but... We know there are probably other Earth-sized or other kind of planets out there, and that's just 4 light years away, and Earth rocks could have hit there.
All right. Now, which do you want to do? Do you want to build? Like I just described how smart species be exploring by sending out probes. Dumb species be piling into a ship and going to visit them one at a time. Like you tell me there's a planet that's Earth-like out there, first thing I want to do is pile into a ship and go check it out one at a time.
Sure. I think that's how we find out which ones we want to go to. Is we send out the little Smart Dust or the modified water bears.
I mean, otherwise you're just buying a car on eBay. You kick the tires a little bit.
That's a good way to put it.
Let's go. That's Earth-sized. Yeah. Oh, it's only orbits 3 million miles from the sun.
You're like, well, that's dumb.
Stupid water bears. That's the last time I trust a water bear.
Whose idea for a road trip was this? It sounded good at the time. You guys all cheered when I said, let's go to New Orleans. And you're like, well, now we're all the way over here in space, and it sucks.
Water bears? Sorry.
It's over there.
I'll tell you what. You want to know who loves water bears? Well, that's Justin Newton. He's got a New England rock band, quote, Forging Reverie, unquote. That's the name of their band. They've released, not the quote, unquote. I just put that in there because I'm stupid. They've released a new album, Motion Canvas. It's self-produced and independently released. All the members of the band, and I do mean all the members, at least they say. So if the bassist really doesn't listen to the podcast, then I hope everybody else yells at him. They like the podcast, and they support us, and we support them. So go ahead and check out what they are working on. It is Forging Reverie and their new album, Motion Canvas. So check on that if you dig this podcast and independent music.
Right.
Here, the tambourine guy in the band really digs us.
Loves it. Loves it.
Is it my turn yet, guys? Is it my turn yet?
He would love to not sexually cuddle a water bear.
We'll let you the band because your sister's got hot friends.
See, now I want to see it. Now I want to make the counter argument like, there's no way you can cuddle with a water bear and not get aroused. It has to be sexual.
Just look at him.
Just look at him, man.
That all right, one, back to the cuddling thing.
That one claw-like proboscis.
What's your cuddle price, gentlemen?
One thing, bro.
Those awesome leathery folds.
What's your cuddle price, gentlemen?
For what? For a water bear? Or for with anyone?
Anyone. Bonnie walks in right now and says, Brian.
Yeah.
I don't think it's good that her kids have a magician as a father.
Yeah, all right. They need a cuddle artist, and I'd like you to go out.
Anything. You're like, oh, what if I become a cuddle artist? Just fine. Do that.
Okay.
Now.
Hold on. Wait, before you say anything, Brian.
Sure.
Are we setting this price knowing that anybody...
It's all takers. You got to be a professional. You can't like have the doorbell ring and you open it up. You kind of look up and down. You're like $90. You know, I don't know. Most professional services, like for masseuses and whatever, just whatever the going massage rate is. You got anything from $50 an hour to $150 an hour. So I guess that's probably the professional rate.
Whoa, hold on. You're not going higher than the average massage price?
Oh, dude, I mean, I'll take...
Brian has low self-esteem. Remember that, Justin.
As much as I can. I mean, I'll take $1,000. Actually, here's the flip side, right? You charge enough, there becomes an expectation. And you're like, why is he paying me $800 to cuddle for an hour?
I like Brian assumes that it's dudes. It's all dudes, you know, sure, coming to him for the cuddling services.
Well, you have to be prepared. I'm with Brian on this one. You have to be prepared for the dudes.
Yeah.
So you're open to that. Okay, just checking.
Well, I mean, this is a service. This is what you offer. It's just like, you're not sexist. You know, it's like, you can't say, we'll cuddle with Asians, you know? It's like, you've got to be open to all...
I got to return all these shirts.
No Eskimos.
Jesus. No. Racist.
That's what I'm saying, is you can't do that. You got to be pro.
You're gonna have Ariel Tweedo from Flying Wild Alaska protesting outside your shop.
Yes.
And talk like that.
See, you gotta, and if there is some physical arousal, you have to be ready for the probo. You gotta be professional about it.
You gotta have a policy, a way to say
so
it.
So wait, hold on. Whoa. So you're not kicking them right out? You're not like, whoa, flag on the play.
Well, no, I would assume it would be like
encroachment.
Oh. Encroachment. I assume it would be like, whoa, or it would be just like, it seems like you need a moment to take care of something. So I'll give you 5 minutes and then go out. And then, you know, it's like you don't jump out of bed and say, freak. I would imagine.
So So, I mean, I would say as your manager, Brian, I would say.
No, hold on. This was the original question was for both of us. What our fees
you
were.
I will accept your counsel when I have to make my decision. But if I were to offer you mine, I would say that you need to at least go 25% over your standard massage rate.
Okay.
At basement.
Yeah, but you see, I mean, massage rate, you have to actually work and do things and learn. Like, cuddle, you just got to lay there. Well, I guess.
But it's a far more intimate thing. Even if it is non-sexual, it's a more intimate thing. You have to admit that.
I don't know. I mean, I guess you're in bed.
All right.
That part, certainly.
Okay.
But like, wait, what's that? Oh, I'm sorry.
Client's knocking on your door, Brian.
All right, Justin, if you're going to be my manager, you're going to answer the damn door. I ain't getting out of my couch.
Hello? Brian's house of completely non-sexual cuddling, he swears.
Hey, listen, I was looking at a cuddle session, air quotes, and every time I say cuddle, I'm going to do air quotes, by the way.
All right, got it.
I was wondering if maybe I could do some form of trade.
Some kind of trade where you have goods or services? You got some, like, meat that's about to expire?
Let me do the negotiating.
I'm sorry. You'll have to talk to my manager. I can't be particular.
You do the cuddling. He does the talking.
That's right.
Trade, you say? What are we talking about? Expired meats?
I've got the next 6 episodes of Walking Dead on DVD.
Ooh. Like
what?
Right now?
Producer Glenn Mazzara.
Yes. It's stressful producing. And I'm on my way back from Georgia to L.A., and I stopped by Brian's House of Cuddle Pleasure, non-sexual.
Yes. Sure.
Quote, air quote. And
there's no air quotes. Stop saying there are air quotes.
Brian,
okay.
let me sorry. Negotiate.
Sorry. Listen, last time you made a mess of the whole thing, and it took a week to clean up all the sheets.
Get into bed. Get into bed right now. We're bringing home money.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, on the next 6 episodes of Walking Dead.
All right. Okay, number one, there's no guarantee that these next 6 episodes aren't going to be garbage. And I would hate for my client to get a probo and all of a sudden be left with 6 really boring episodes. So how do you say, let's just stick to the money rate? We're doing $250 an hour.
$250 an hour. Listen, that woman who does her cuddling up in Rochester, New York, only gets $60 an hour. She's a pro. She's real good. I go to her because I've also got.
She's only charging $60 an hour.
I've also got a pass to go see Skyfall and Hobbit.
See, to be honest, I wish I'd known that early on, because that's sort of like is the answer for whether or not it's sexual or whatever. Like, if it's $60, then it can't be sexual. There cannot be anything satisfying or sexual about it at that rate.
Hmm. Brian, next time you're down in South Florida, we'll take a little walk.
Did you know how desperate Rochester is?
Not right. Touché, sir.
For parts of town, $60, you're rolling like Trump.
Trump exactly. The cuddler.
Don't touch the hair.
put one arm over here.
By the way, now that I think about it, Weird Things super fan and dear friend to us all, Rabbit Badger, I believe is in the Rochester area. We could have him.
Man, what if we had ground reporting? Because he's uniquely qualified to make sure it's non-sexual and it engages the services of that woman.
I think we might need to recruit Rabbit Badger on a Weird Things iTeam investigate.
We could do we could resurrect Weird Things live investigates. He could set up and just turn on Ustream, leave it in his pocket, and we could see just how weird it is.
We just have him hook up a heart monitor to a certain pressure point.
Well, here's the problem. I'm all for this, by the way. We're not going to conclusively prove in this situation that it does not sexual. If we get a positive sexual reaction,
right,
that
would be remarkable. Yeah, this is like trying to prove a negative, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, that would be like okay. I mean, like methane on Mars. Okay, if we don't find methane on Mars, doesn't mean there's no life on Mars.
Right. But if we did find methane, right.
Okay. If we don't get a sexual reaction between Mr. RB and the professional snuggler,
right.
I think it says more about his arousal than his
calibration.
Ability to arouse of this young lady.
That's right. By the way, that sound, that was us hitting the upper limit of good taste. And I think it's time to see if we have another sponsor.
We're going to keep this slot open because if you would like to sponsor the podcast, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor.
All right. I propose we do a two-part. We do a discussion and a pick.
Yes. I like
it. Discussion, Star Wars.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. A million times. Yes. Little Brian, who was done with Star Wars. I've been very vocal that I'm not a fan of a lot of what's happened in the last decade in the Star Wars universe, and some things made me question why I even hung out in this clubhouse. And then freaking the mouse buys the whole clubhouse, and now I want to join the Mickey Mouse Club. I'm super happy. This is
so
gonna be nothing
but great.
Are your
feelings about this impacted, would you say, heavily now that we know a few years on Marvel and Pixar how Disney's handled the versus our prior fears?
Yes, exactly. Like I remember, I mean, set the Wayback Machine 4 years ago. I remember talking with Justin on maybe the 10th or 11th BB Live show when the news dropped that that Marvel was bought by Disney, and I'm sure I was on the wrong side of things, saying I was super worried about it. And man, since then, the Marvel movies have been better than I ever dreamed as a kid that they could be. The Avengers was one of my all-time, you know, probably top 10 movie experiences of forever. And that was all possible because you had a global brand that knew how to make consistent product that was good and get the most value out of their purchases. And we've seen that, you know, since they bought Pixar, since they bought the Muppets. The Muppets was pure magic when I watched it a year ago. And that was largely in part to the work Disney's doing. And if they could bring that to the Star Wars universe, can't wait, man.
You heard about Muppets 2?
No. What are they doing for Muppets 2?
It's in Europe with Christoph Waltz.
Wait, yes. I don't know who that is.
The Jew Hunter from Inglourious Bastards.
Okay, yes. Amazing.
And of course, Django Unchained coming up in December. Now, me and Andrew did a Google Hangout where we talked about this extensively, which you can see on the site. And we were, I think it's safe to say me and Andrew were both extraordinarily positive on the transaction. But allow me to play devil's advocate. Because since Disney has bought Pixar, one could make the argument that outside of the initial kind of slate of movies that were already in the pipe, you know, as that merger was going through, because obviously animation is something that takes a long while to happen, that their last three or four movies have not been critically to the level that some of their previous ones have, speaking specifically of Cars 2 and Brave.
Right. Well, but also, like, you're talking about, like, started since after, because, like, the Incredibles came after the purchase.
Their acquisition.
Yeah.
Now, I personally do not think that this is a big thing, but one, just to play devil's advocate in terms of, because people have pointed to, and I think Marvel, there's no way you can look at Marvel and not say that Disney's been a fantastic steward of that. And you could even make the argument that Disney's animation as a whole has greatly benefited from Pixar people being in more leadership positions, as you've seen with Wreck-It Ralph, coming out this weekend to great critical acclaim. But the Pixar thing, I mean, I think if we are going to be fair, then you need to at least factor in Cars 2 and Brave.
Yeah.
Well, I would say this. That's not been a case of Disney. That's been a case of John Lasseter having complete control and be able to do pretty much what he wanted. Cars 2 was his all the way. It was, he wanted to do that. That was because they knew, they also knew financially what it would mean. And it was just, and that was a play certainly for that younger audience. Brave, I didn't see Brave. I heard good stuff about it, but you know, before we had Up, which, you know, was of that post era, and I thought was brilliant, wonderful,
perhaps very, their best work.
And and you know, I saw Wreck-It Ralph, and you know, Lasseter was EP of that as well, so he's overseeing the Disney side of that stuff. So I don't think it's any of that stuff is an effect.
And Brave, to be fair to Brave, had a lot of behind the scenes drama with the director and the person who envisioned, I think it was Brenda Chapman, being replaced at what is an animation, the 11th hour, like a year before the release, and having a lot of the plot retooled and everything. So there were a lot of reasons why Brave maybe wasn't what it could have been.
Well, and keep in mind also, I remember that there's a bit of a statistical anomaly in that Disney bought Pixar just after an unprecedented string of franchise creating super blockbusters that were critical successes, you know, right after Finding Nemo, you know, cracks $900 million and so on. So at some point there's got to be a little bit of the Sports Illustrated syndrome or regression to the mean, where it's like you can only be so extraordinary for so long before you slip back and be closer to what you would expect from.
Well, Andrew's right. I mean, listen, any animation house that if you told them that in 4 years you're going to release Up, Toy Story 3, Cars 2,
Wall-E,
and Brave.
And Wall-E.
Wall-E. You know, I mean, listen, there's two of them that aren't among the vanguard of animation of all time. And one of them is the biggest money-making property ever, you know, for your company, and you know, among the most profitable in the history of merchandising, and the other is, you know, what many would even, you know, even people who were critical about Brave thought, you know, was a good, well-told story, and did a very good job of trying to tell a story about a mother and a daughter, which is something that you don't normally see with the kind of seriousness that they wanted to do.
Here's what I would say the big difference is, you know, when Marvel finally kind of got together and they had sort of the Marvel creative team of the people actually running, and they said, yeah, we're going to build this cohesive universe, we're going to do that, and Marvel Studios really got its head on straight about that. There was a creative team in place that has this. Pixar, the same thing. Lucasfilm is one guy and a bunch of computer animators.
Well, and they also keep in mind that part of the reason there was an article on Wired talking about why Pixar sold for $7.5 billion and Star Wars only sold for $4 billion, and part of the answer was that that Pixar, of course, created all of these different franchises. You can name several of them that continue to make money, and the merchandise rights for Cars alone has been just off the charts. Whereas Lucasfilm, they do have, like, you know, Indiana Jones, but essentially the bulk of all their money came from Star Wars, and not even really the creation of Star Wars movies, but the bulk of their cash came from licensing, from profiting on the Star Wars name, which according to the Wired article, was a similar position to what Marvel was in at the time it was purchased, which is why it went for a comparable price for what Marvel went to.
Let's say with the Cars franchise alone is worth like Star Wars when it comes to because you have to think of all the four-year-olds when it comes time for what kind of blankets, what they're going to have in their room, and the pillowcases, the lampshades, all that.
Right.
Huge. Sorry, Justin?
No, I was just going to say, just so put into context, Iron Man, Captain America, you know, every Marvel property, all of them tied together and stapled equals one Star Wars. Like, that is the merchandising and licensing valuation that you're looking at in terms of, you know, how much these characters, you know, can make on a yearly, you know, basis for whoever owns the rights to them.
Okay. Okay. Here's my question. So we've got episode 7 coming out.
Yeah.
3 years, 2015. It's going to come very fast. Justin, what's your hope?
Yeah.
What do you want to see? Brian?
What do I want the plot of episode 7 to be?
What do you want? Do you want, what would you want to see happen with the franchise?
I mean, Justin and I have talked about some of this. Like, I know that I personally would love it if all they did was straight up if they pulled a Star Trek, they recast all of the characters from the original stories, and they did the straight up Heir to the Empire Thrawn trilogy, where you know, which takes place 5 years after the other one, so you get different actors playing Luke, Han, Leia, etc. That alone would be great, but I don't think they're going to do that. If they were going to borrow those plot elements, it would be with the children of Han and Luke and Leia, and I think they would do it well, but if, you know, you, at some point you'll see with a small role Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher and all these other actors.
I'll tell you what, I would like to see, let's just we've talked about, recast all the characters. Let's just rock and roll. Let's just get her done. And in terms of the Heir to the Empire thing, obviously that is, you know, what a lot of people, including, you know, me and Brian have talked about it. And we talked about it, you know, back before we knew that this was a possibility. We had a big hypothetical conversation about casting Thrawn movies, not but a couple weeks ago, which I was very excited to see people, you know, on Twitter, like their second and then third thoughts about this entire merger was like,
oh
my God, I got to go back and look at, you know, what the Weird Things guys said about casting those movies. But in terms of taking some of those characters, some of those elements, let's craft another story about, you know, I think there's a lot of interesting elements about what happens after, you know, the events of those, you know, of the original trilogy. And really that's what we want. We want this story. We want these characters. We want to see these things going forward. Now, what's brilliant about Star Wars is that you can tell a million different stories. You can tell stories that are far out in the future, but in terms of what different stories, you can tell stories that are far out in the future, but in terms of what different stories, you can tell stories that are far out in the future, but in terms of what different stories, you can tell stories that are far out in the future, but in terms of what I hope will happen is an awesome Luke Skywalker, you know, Princess Leia, Han Solo, remnants of the Empire.
Man, I don't know. Like, I kind of, part of me wouldn't mind just a complete blank slate. And I'm saying, like, I don't even want, well, I mean, there's no way they'll get away with it, but it's like, it would be great if this took place in a totally different backwater corner of the galaxy where we saw all different aliens and we saw all different cultures. We saw all different styles of spaceships and stuff. It's like, how great would it be to see something built in this world that was all new and fresh?
Here's my fear, and then I'll get into my hope. My fear is, I love the original cast. I love Harrison Ford, love Carrie Fisher, Mark Hamill, all of them. Love them. I like Karen Allen in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Bringing Karen Allen back and Indiana Jones together to sort of do Crystal Skull was one of the many things about that movie that probably did not work well for me. And the idea of just, you know, I thought Leonard Nimoy and Star Trek, the movie, I thought was great because it fit into the timeline. It wasn't this unnecessary. He was integral to the plot and it worked. And
it was
and
a bridge. It was a structurally important piece of the story.
And yeah, just fit into that story that, you know, the future. Why not have Leonard Nimoy play future older Spock? So. Right. That's my concern, and given that Lucas was the guy that said, Crystal Skull, this is what I want to do. I want to wrestle with my issues of fatherhood and all. That's my worry. My hope is, like you guys say, I say recast. It's not disrespectful. I don't even do cameos because that takes you out of it.
See, I agree.
Recast. You know, my concern is, you know, Lucas sold them treatments, detailed treatments. Disney can do whatever they want with them. They're going to get Kennedy is probably going to bring on a really sharp producer. She's a sharp producer, but probably a really sharp producer, screenwriter, to go over this and to look through that. And there's a lot of really good people out there that would be capable of that. And then a director. And I'll tell you a guy who I think, you know, could probably do wonders with it is Ronald Moore.
Oh, my gosh. Ronald D. Moore from Battlestar Galactica fame.
Exactly.
Oh, and dude, that would be incredible.
Battle scenes in DS. Battlestar Galactica, I thought, was a great – up until, like, the last 20 minutes of the finale, I thought was just a great show all the way through.
Sure.
And the battle scenes, there are battle scenes in there that I would put up that I think were better than anything we saw in the prequels.
Well, and if you think about what made Battlestar Galactica so great, it was many of the things that were revolutionary about Star Wars as a franchise at the time. You know, in the late 70s, it seemed like most of science fiction was white backgrounds and robes and these very specific, clean worlds, whereas, you know, Star Wars was dark and gritty and it was visceral, and it had these analogs to things we understood, shooting someone under the table, that kind of thing. And likewise, Battlestar Galactica, you know, by eschewing, you know, no lasers, no space, you know, let's get back to the visceral. I want nukes and explosion and guns that you could feel rattling as they fire off.
And the battle footage felt like it was World War II battle footage, which is what Lucas tried to do in the first Star Wars films.
Yeah.
And the prequels didn't feel like that, but Battlestar Galactica, you felt like you're watching a History Channel documentary about, oh, yeah, the Cylon Wars. I remember those.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, man.
Remember the awesome scenes in battle? Remember, like, when it did the atmospheric drop?
For which one?
The Adama maneuver?
The Domino maneuver, yeah.
Oh, dude, I'm going to have to go back and rewatch all of those. It is the experience of seeing the first episode, 33, was just utterly mind-blowing. It was so good that I immediately went back and, you know, asked everyone I knew, hey, was the miniseries this good? And they're like, oh, no, it's even better. And watching it from the beginning, just like talk about a franchise that from the beginning acted like there was no future and just give everything now, save nothing for the swim back. That first season, including the miniseries, may be one of my favorite single seasons of television of any variety.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think we can do an entire episode of just singing the praises of Battlestar. I mean, it's so good on so many levels. I agree wholeheartedly with Ronald D. Moore as somebody who would be a great shepherd of this franchise of the rebooted Star Wars. And really, that's, Dave, you want to know why I get excited about the movies? Here are the reasons. And not to say that they would be people that directed this movie, but Kenneth Branagh, Joss Whedon, you know, everybody else that's directed these Marvel movies since Disney has taken over. And it's just, they seem to know, hey, these guys do good work, but let's take interesting people, interesting directors. And we'll see what the Iron Man 3 trailer looks awesome. And giving Shane Black that director's role is not a conventional choice, but it looks like it might be the right choice. And if it is the right choice, then that shows tremendous foresight and tremendous, faith in Marvel and picking the right people to direct these movies. Like, you know, for a lot of people, Joss Whedon wasn't the first name that they would think of for the Avengers. But as soon as they mentioned Joss Whedon doing the Avengers, people who love Joss Whedon stuff knew that that was going to be something that they would like to watch. And America and the world agreed that he did a great job with it.
Here's my closing thought on this is that there is a lot of cynicism out there. And there's the people like, oh, they should let the brand sit or whatever like that. My attitude like that is it's not for you.
Yeah.
It's for those of us that think that Star Wars can have a big future. There can still be great Star Wars movies that when you have a story that goes 20,000 years and combine so many awesome elements of science fiction, there's so much potential. And I'm all for, it's not one character like Superman. It's a huge galaxy. And if you're not excited, it's fine. We'll make up for that enthusiasm.
Yes. Just so absolutely.
If we want to talk about picks, I actually, just from the discussion we had right now, I got two supplemental picks for that.
Go for it.
So there are two things we mentioned. If you can't wait for more Star Wars and you think, oh, 2 whole years to get good stories, turns out that there's an entire archive of really, really good Star Wars stories that have nothing to do with the original stories. It's new. It's fresh. They're written by science fiction's best minds out there are the anthologies, the Tales of Expanded Universe stories, Tales of Jabba's Palace, Tales of the Bounty Hunters, Tales of the Mos Eisley Cantina. They are awesome little vignettes that just make the Star Wars universe seem so much bigger. One of our biggest complaints was how small the prequels kept making the Star Wars universe, where everyone keeps bumping into the same people on the same planets and Jabba's some kind of, you know, civic leader at some point. Whereas this is the opposite. It makes the whole universe seem bigger and grittier and crazier. So definitely check those out if you want more Star Wars stories. They're very, very good. And then also we talked about Battlestar Galactica coming out in only 2 or 3 days is they're finally releasing the ill-fated Battlestar Galactica Blood and Chrome series. They piloted some stuff. They were talking about making it a new series about young William Adama in his early days in the first Cylon War. So this is back against the Toasters. And they didn't end up getting it picked up, but they are releasing it first on YouTube on the Machinima channel. So if you go to YouTube.com. What?
It's not, I saw the trailer and it looks good, but I'm like, this is not a good sign.
Oh, no, no, no. It's not a good sign, but it's like, I want to see it. Think about it this way. Battlestar Galactica is entering the period where Star Wars was in the early 90s, where you just wished there was more and you could say, hey, remember Star Wars? And people are like, man, I loved it. I wish there was more. And now it's like, Battlestar Galactica, if you wish there was more, now you got your chance. You can check it out as a series of webisodes coming up in just a couple of days.
Although the last time in those 90s era when we all talked about Star Wars and wished there was more, we got the prequels. So sometimes be careful what you wish for.
Well, that's true. Touche, sir. Well spoken.
I have a real quick pick, then I have another recommendation. And I may have made this recommendation before, but I'm going to reiterate it because now it's become newly available. Quick pick is I just got the iPad Mini. Absolutely love the iPad Mini. It is my preferred iPad of choice right now. And if you're on an iPad 3 or you just have the fourth gen and you're used to the Retina display, which some people go from that to this and are okay with it. Otherwise, if you're looking to get an iPad and haven't had an iPad before, seriously consider the Mini. Go play with it. The form factor is fantastic. It fits in my pocket of my large cargo shorts. It's super lightweight. It's one of those things where I did real work on it because in landscape mode, the keyboard was quite fine to type on. So that's my pick for that. But my media pick is available now on Netflix. Watch instantly is Terry Pratchett's Going Postal. And it's based on another one of his books, which was Going Postal. And it takes place in the Discworld, which is this sort of zany kind of Harry Potter meets Lord of the Rings with a bit of Monty Python thrown in kind of place. And this is about somebody who has to take over the post office, which does not sound exciting, but actually has very far-reaching consequences. And so check that out if you've got Netflix. It's called Going Postal. I just won't go into it much more than that, but it's just if you like Potter, you like Lord of the Rings, and you like comedy and stuff, and you like Terry Pratchett. If you've seen the other ones, The Hogfather, which I enjoyed, and then the Color of Magic, which was another delightful one. This is the third same people who did those. So it's called Going Postal.
Right on.
Groovy. Well, by the time that many of you will listen to this podcast, we will here in the good old US of A have resolved our 2012 presidential
Kodos
election.
2012.
But if after all this you're like, man, I really want more political talk, which is what I will be saying, because to me, Wednesday equals the begin of the 2016 presidential race because I love presidential politics.
Wait, Justin, I'm going to interrupt. I have a plan, by the way. Because, yeah, for Justin and I, this political season, it's like the playoffs.
It's awesome.
It is. I mean, we're just political junkies. And then it's like going through withdrawal. It's like, forget who wins. What's the next election?
Right.
And I've got a theory. We're gonna hope for that Cameron dissolves parliament so we can watch some UK elections. And I'm starting to follow the Canadian political system.
So this is not bad. This is like you're following different local leagues at this point. It's like
this is like when baseball fans start following the Mexican leagues.
Yeah.
In the off season, that's basically what we're going to be doing. But if for some reason you're like, well, hey, listen, I want to read more about politics. I got three recommendations for you. They're all available on Audible. The first is Primary Colors by Anonymous, who writes suspiciously a lot like Joe Klein. It is the fictional tale of a early 90s candidate for president who comes from – he's a governor from a southern state with a real operator for a wife and a Cajun fast-talking political advisor. It's awesome. It was the basis of the movie featuring John Travolta, which I liked, but I don't think was as good as the book. So get that. It's awesome. It's fantastic to read. The second one is Game Change, especially as if you want to get a sense of how an election looks afterward, and we're going to see books like this about this election because we always do. But if you want to look, I mean, to see a lot of the same characters that you have heard about in this particular election, specifically on the Obama side, it is great. That was made into the movie that only focused on Sarah Palin, the HBO movie Game Change, which to me left out the best parts about that book are about John Edwards and his late wife, Elizabeth, which I don't dare to even spoil any of. It is absolute carnage. And then finally, The Price of Politics by Bob Woodward, which if, believe you me, no matter who wins tomorrow, one of the biggest things they're going to have to deal with is the debt ceiling thing that was kicked down the road last summer. No matter who wins, it's going to be about that. And if you want a primer on a lot of those issues, then it's a great, fantastic book to read. Although I think I told Brian that Congress, the workings of Congress is often referred to as how the sausage is made. And there are many of you, because I have a strong stomach for stuff like this. There are many of you who will read this and at the end of it will prefer to have watched a sausage get made from conception of the pig to the final bite of it on somebody's dinner table in excruciating detail, because it is raw, ugly Senate and congressional politics in the worst possible ways. So it might turn your stomach. But there we go. So Bob Woodward, Price of Politics. I forget who wrote Game Change and Anonymous. Primary Colors. The politics don't ever have to stop, everybody. We can just keep reading about it.
We could be angry all year long.
General Zod, 2012.
Wait, what did you say? I missed it.
General Zod.
Oh, General Zod. Don't blame me. I voted for Kodos.
Neil,
this has been the Weird Things podcast, and I would say from heated discussion or interesting discussion about Star Wars to space water bears and the snuggery, it's been pretty weird.
90 bucks. Final offer.
98%.
98%.
You want to sponsor the podcast? Do you have $30? If so, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor and you can have Justin say whatever you want. He's a trained ape.